Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to the Bobby Podcast. My name is Bobby Kazmaier, and for the last 2 years, I've been sharing my story in eating disorder recovery, showing the wins, the losses, the good days, the bad days, the ups, the downs of recovery, being authentic and vulnerable on this podcast, on TikTok, on Instagram, trying to make eating disorder recovery talk less taboo, trying to destigmatize it, especially for guys, just because I'm a guy, and I know that when I was deep in struggling, I didn't feel like I could talk to anyone about it. I felt really alone. So the goal of this is just make everyone feel less alone about their own struggles, to show that you're not alone if you are struggling with food and body image. There is no diet culture talk on here. There's no weight loss talk on here. There are no numbers on here. Everything is real and authentic, and I just want to help others and make you feel less alone if you're struggling. I just recently got my degree in nutrition, my undergraduate degree. It's just a crazy pipeline going from eating disorder to nutrition degree, but I wouldn't trade my story for the world, my journey for the world. I feel like this happened to me for a reason, and that reason is to help others in their own recovery and their own struggles. I'm not a professional yet, but that is the ultimate goal, but I'm just sharing my own story. And I really want to thank you for listening, because none of this would be possible without you. And thank you, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Today, I am joined by Coach Mike Milner. Mike has been a high-quality level nutrition coach for over the past decade and specializes in helping thousands of clients with their fitness and nutrition goals through a behavior change approach that is the most sustainable for them. He prioritizes connecting with his clients to help figure out where they are in their journey on a personal level and understanding that each person is unique in their own way. He recognizes exercise and nutrition habits is not something that can be a quick fix. Mike is also the author of The Personality Diet, a book that debunks diet culture myths and helps provide a much clearer understanding on attaining long-term success. Mike is also the host of top podcast Mind Over Macros, where he delivers his information in a firm but gentle way for all levels, whether you're a nutrition or fitness expert or you're just starting out. In this episode, Mike shares his upbringing and how he became a business owner and began working with his clients. We also get into some in-depth topics and questions surrounding the strong association between weighing less and being more happy, and why that isn't the case for many, finding the root of why we're so fixated with a number on the scale, and how we as humans make decisions from an emotional level first and logically second. Mike was a pleasure to have on the pod, and all of his social media and podcast links will be in the description down below. So please go check them out and enjoy the episode. All right, we have Coach Mike Milner on the pod. Mike, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on, man. And before we get into anything, the first question I ask all my guests are, what is your favorite food of all time?
Favorite food of all time? I have to say French fries.
Yeah, it's actually really funny. I actually just had French fries right before this, like 2 hours ago, with the grilled chicken sandwich. Delicious. Are you a curly fry guy, or just like, you know, straight up?
I don't discriminate. I do like some curly fries, but you know, steak fries, shoestring, whatever. I love French fries.
Yeah. Oh man, they're the best. Do you dip them in ketchup? Like, how do you like them?
Yeah, typically ketchup. People make fun of me because I put ketchup on a lot of different things, and sometimes questionable, like ketchup on eggs. A lot of people have an issue with, but I think it's delicious. But for sure, ketchup with my French fries.
Love it, man. And I'm also a ketchup on eggs guy. I totally get what you mean there. I love ketchup on eggs. Excellent, man. Awesome. So fitness, you love it. You know, that's what your podcast is really centered about. That's what your passion is really all about. And just, you know, would you mind sharing your upbringing with fitness and exercise, kind of how you got into it, and how you got to where you are now?
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up an athlete and played pretty much every sport, and I was always active. Felt like I was pretty fortunate because I always had like a fast metabolism. I was just always doing something, playing outside, playing sports. And a lot of my family dynamics, I had witnessed dieting from a very young age in my mom and then my sisters. I have two older sisters, and I always felt like I was the fortunate one because I just stayed pretty lean, and I was always active and never had to really worry about what I was eating or how I was moving my body. So it just kind of came naturally to me. And then I went off to college and picked up some typical college kid habits. I started eating a lot of junk food. I started drinking a lot of beer and alcohol, and gained a significant amount of weight very quickly because I no longer had organized sports after I graduated. I played sports all through college, and then once I finished school, I was just sitting on my ass a lot and eating a lot and drinking a lot. So typically, when you combine those things together, you find yourself at a much heavier weight. And to me, it felt like it happened overnight. I remember going into the bathroom one morning and looking in the mirror and just totally not recognizing myself. And I was like, oh, this has gotten really bad. I should probably do something about it. And I was afraid to like see friends that I hadn't seen in a long time. I was afraid to go back home and see family because I didn't want to answer questions about like what happened? How did you let yourself go like this? And I had all these stories in my head about what that would be like. So my solution was to try and lose weight as fast as I possibly could. And I went on this like 1200 calorie meal plan. I started doing hours of cardio every day. I would lose like 80 pounds and then I would gain it back. And then I would lose like 50 pounds and I would gain it back. And I just was on this chronic dieting cycle for years, almost a decade actually. And that was what made me kind of realize, it got pretty severe with my body image issues, with body dysmorphia, with disordered eating tendencies. And just slowly crawling myself out of that place was what made me want to pay it forward and help people. First, I started as a personal trainer, and then I realized that more people were struggling with nutrition than anything else. So I kind of found my passion on the nutrition side, started working as a nutrition coach for another company, didn't really align with their approach. It was very cookie cutter, it was very automated. And ultimately, I left and started my own business and, have been able to do things the right way, in my opinion, the right way, which is more of a person first approach, like understanding the individual and what makes them unique and being able to create something that's sustainable forever versus just a, 90-day quick fix. And that's kind of the quick version of my story.
Yeah. Hey, I appreciate you sharing that, man. That's awesome. And I can relate to so much of that. Like just the constant like yo-yo dieting, like, you know, the constant, like the dieter cycle. I was watching or listening to one of your clips where you mentioned the dieter cycle, and that's exactly what it feels like, man. And I, especially like the age I'm at now, like I'm in that, I just finished college. I'm in that college age. I see it everywhere. You know, people drinking all the time, eating all the time. Like I see it, and it's so common. It's so hard to get out of. So that's awesome that you're able to like get out of that and then, turn that into the passion for helping out other people. And can you kind of just dive into your, you mentioned your the person first approach with what you do. Can you kind of describe what that looks like for you and your clients?
Yeah, for sure. So the first thing that we do for all clients is we actually do a personality assessment because it helps us to understand their behavioral tendencies, their strengths and weaknesses, some of the things that they'll naturally gravitate towards, getting an idea of just how they're wired, right? So we want to work with that individual's nature versus fighting against it. Some people are very much structure driven. They like organization, they like detail. That's not me at all. I like variety. I like to try new things. So we want to know that ahead of time. We also do a metabolic assessment to get an idea of, somebody's diet history. Where are you at with your metabolic health or your hormone health? Are there things that we're going to have to overcome through this process? Like somebody like myself, where I did a number on my thyroid because I had been chronically dieting for so long. I gave myself hypothyroidism, and now I have Hashimoto's. And so there can be an impact if you are restricting calories too much, if you're dieting for too long, if you are eliminating certain foods, if you have nutrient deficiencies. So we kind of want to get ahead of that and know what that looks like for each individual, because that's all going to determine the game plan moving forward. And then we also want to understand that person's lifestyle and what do they ultimately value? What do they want? What does their personal life look like? Their family dynamics, their personal preferences. What foods do you enjoy? What does your social life look like? Those are kind of like the three big pillars that we look at first, so we can start to tailor a plan for that individual. And we really prefer to take the more of the behavior change approach, where it has to be sustainable long term. Changing your behaviors is not easy, but it's the only way, in my opinion, to create lasting change. Anybody can follow a meal plan for 30 days. Anybody can diet for 30 days. Anybody can, follow a workout plan for 30 days, but can you actually become the person who enjoys eating quality food? Can you become the person who enjoys going to the gym? Can you become the person who enjoys moving their body and getting steps in and drinking water? So it's a gradual process of helping people to define that future version of themselves that they want to be, and then understanding what behaviors does that person do on a daily basis? And then how can we gradually close that gap from where you are to where you want to be?
Yeah, I love all that, man. That's so in depth. And you're right, because a lot of people, that they look for the quick fix. Like I remember I would do that in the past. I'd always look for, oh, how can I lose, you know, X number of pounds in X amount of days, you know, and get it, like have like my summer body, have all this, you know. But exactly, that's, you want to make the long-term sustainable changes. Cause that's, you know, obviously, you know, a diet, cause diets, you know, they fail 100% of the time, meaning like, you know, 9.5 times out of 10, you end up gaining the weight back and then some, because you know, what you did is not sustainable. So yeah, I think finding this, you know, the long-term sustainability is so key. And like, what is, like, for the majority of your clients, are they coming in for primarily weight loss? Like what are, like, what do you see the most when you first talk with somebody?
Yeah, most of our clients have tried a number of diets and programs or even coaches in the past and have felt like nothing works for them, or they saw some temporary results and then they gained it back and they just haven't been able to figure it out. And a lot of times it looks like frustration that they're putting in all of this work. We typically don't work with clients who are like just coming from a, you know, really sedentary background and they have no nutritional knowledge whatsoever. Typically our clients are people who, they know about working out. They're probably, you know, training pretty consistently, or at least they have in the past. And they know a little bit about nutrition. They probably are familiar with tracking macros. They probably tried, you know, Weight Watchers or OptiVia or a program like that, or maybe they hired a macro based coach. And there's definitely a little bit more of a, just knowledge base around nutrition and training. And they're like, well, why am I working so hard? Why am I busting my ass in the gym? Why am I spending all this time counting macros and yet my body doesn't look the part? And that's the biggest disconnect. You're like, I'm working so hard, and if my body doesn't look the part and I'm not seeing the results, like, why even bother? Why am I putting in all this effort if it's not going to show? That's typically the person that we work best with. And it's really, it's gratifying because they feel like they're broken, and then we help them understand you're not broken and you just haven't ever been given a process or a way of doing things that was tailored to you and your body and your, you know, individual kind of metabolic fingerprint or your personality type. And it's pretty easy to see what the missing piece is. Now it's easy to see the missing piece. It's not easy to fix it, in the sense that they have to buy into the process being a long-term process. And we really have to shift that mindset from how quickly can I fix this to how can I fix this and make sure that it never breaks again.
Yeah, that's definitely like that's the biggest thing with people, like with people you work with, especially in your field. Like, you have to be in there for the long haul. It's a day by day process. You're not going to fix this overnight. And I think, so when you overview a client's, you know, history with, you know, nutrition and diet, exercise, what are like the biggest gaping holes you see nutritionally, like nutrition wise, from your clients in terms of, you know, whether it be macros, food groups they eat, things of that nature? What do you see the most?
Yeah, so it varies, but I can give you some of the most common ones. First and foremost is not eating enough. Mm-hmm. Very frequently, women that we work with in particular, trying to eat 800 to 1,000 calories a day. And then they'll be either overindulging or binging on the weekends. And then they'll go, you know, try to reduce calories again. So that's a big one. You know, trying to do too much of what I call like majoring in the minors, where they're like, well, I'm fasting every morning and I'm trying to go keto. But they have like the foundational stuff with like food quality is all out of whack. And that's another thing where they might be trying to eat very little, or they might be trying to follow this advanced protocol, but they haven't even mastered the basics of understanding nutritional quality and like focusing. You know, it's not just a numbers game. It's not just about calories and macros. It's also about the quality of the foods that you're consuming. And how does that make you feel? Like, we want to actually focus on what your body responds to in terms of food choices and foods that make you feel your best and give you energy and help to manage stress. And that's the other big one is the stress component of nutrition. When you are dieting, when you are eating less than maintenance and you're in a calorie deficit, that is a stress on your body. And when you are eliminating certain food groups, when you're trying to, you know, remove carbs, or you're trying to eat super low fat or whatever, you know, some of these protocols are calling for, you're also placing more stress on your system. Fasting is a stress on your system. So the biggest hole that we typically see is some form of nutritional stress. It could be poor food quality, which is, you know, nutritional stress, which could cause inflammation or gut health issues. It could be not eating enough. It could be, you know, trying to do too much fasting, or, you know, complex protocols that aren't actually supporting what they ultimately want to achieve. So those are the most common things when it comes to the gaps in their nutrition.
Yeah, I think the not eating enough one is so true, because especially, like, you know, when I would learn in school, like through my like exercise nutrition classes, things like that, I would see, or my professors would tell us things like, you know, when you're growing up and you say like you're a high school athlete, for example, you need a shit ton of food every single day. Like we're talking, you know, 3,500, 4,000 calories, even depending on the person, like every day. But we don't realize that, especially at the time, especially if you're like a high school athlete, you know, you're in school all day, you only have like one or two times to eat max, and you have to go to practice for 3 hours. You're burning a lot of calories every single day. So that's like where the underfueling comes in. That's, you know, and for in the female gender, potentially, you know, REDS comes into play, the female athlete triad. Like there's really detrimental issues to not eating enough every single day. And it's just, it really just goes to show that like so many people don't know how much they need to be eating every single day. It usually is a lot more than what you think. And it leads me into my next question that I like have debated, like that I've thought about for a while, is like, so I know in my experience and for a lot of people, there's not a whole lot of nutrition education as people grow up. And I'm trying to figure out, or I try to think about how to best articulate that growing up in for kids growing up in school, because I think you have to be careful with the way you teach nutrition education if we were to actually provide that education more, because, you know, you have to be worried about, you know, young kids picking up on certain, you know, potential disordered habits by, you know, learning about calories at a young age, things like that. So I was just wondering if you have any ideas of have how to best articulate nutrition education in schools for, you know, young kids, if we decide to provide that education more often.
I think it is a conversation that needs to be had more frequently. I think it needs to be taught at a younger age. And again, you're right, there's a fine line, because you don't want to send somebody down the path of obsession, or, you know, especially when they're young, you don't want to give them the kind of mindset that certain foods are bad, certain foods are good. But I think ultimately what I have found, this is just personally, what I have found is that kids are much more responsive when you attach something to either a sport or an activity or how it makes them feel. And it's not like you're not attaching morality to food. So I think with the education, it's not saying that fast food is bad or processed foods are bad and, you know, fruits and vegetables are good. It's more about like, hey, these are foods that will give you energy. These are foods that will help you perform your best. These are foods that are going to help you sleep well and recover. And when you attach it to something that's a little bit more positive in that regard, and you're not just labeling these foods, I think that that's the conversation that needs to be had. Like, hey, we eat certain foods because they're delicious, but they also don't provide us the sustained energy that these foods might. They don't provide us with, you know, all of these other health benefits. So I think the way that we navigate the conversation is really important. I think that the awareness around food choices and quality is an important one. And I also think that it is okay to start to create awareness at, you know, maybe in high school around quantity, but more so not telling kids how much they should be eating, more so telling them to fuel enough and to just have some education around food labels and looking at things like that, understanding macronutrients more from an awareness standpoint, not saying they have to start tracking, but I think that it's really helpful for, you know, a teenager to be able to understand what a food label is and understand what protein does. And like, hey, you know, this is something that helps you grow muscle. Right now, you know, my fiance has 3 kids. We live together. So her middle child is 13 years old. He's a boy. He's in 8th grade. And he's all into fitness and nutrition now just from watching us do it. And when we talk about, and he's made some changes to his nutrition, we haven't told him anything to change, like, we haven't said stop eating junk food, stop eating candy. Like, he still eats the foods that he wants to eat, but he's now, because he's into working out, he's like, what do I eat to build muscle? So we talked to him about protein being the building blocks of muscle. And then he's like, oh, that's great. So now I should probably get more protein. And he starts to connect the dots for himself. So it's more of an empowering way of doing things versus just saying like, no, these foods are bad, these foods are good. So I know it is a difficult conversation, but I think it's an important one.
No, I agree. And I think, like, I know for me, for example, like when I was in the, you know, depths of my like obsession with food, calorie counting, exercise, like I think my lack of education growing up was a result of that, or partially a result of that. Because for example, I didn't know what basal metabolic rate was when I was in this obsession with food and calories. I thought, you know, if I ate X amount of calories in food, I would have to burn that off on the treadmill for it to balance out. I had no idea basal metabolic rate was a thing. So I feel like, as you know, if something like that was taught to me at a younger age, and I like obviously have that information catered to the age group, but like if something like that basic was taught to me, maybe my mindset could have been a little bit different. It's just like, I feel like I could have prevented a lot of disordered habits just for me personally. And I feel like that could be the same for a lot of people. But yeah. But like you said, there has to be a fine line, and I think it has to be articulated in the correct way, but I think it really could be beneficial for so many kids at a young age. 100%. So yeah, hopefully down the line, there's more nutrition education in public schooling and schools in general, because it could go such a long way. My next question for you is, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of clients that come in and they say things like, oh, if I just lose 10 more pounds, I'll be really happy. My life would be so much better. You know, if I just lose these last 5 pounds before summer, I'll have my dream body. Everything will be great. But, you know, we see that's not really the case. Like the lower number on the scale does not equate to happiness. So can you kind of talk about that and how you, you know, kind of show that to clients and kind of help switch their mindset a little bit?
Yeah. So the reality is that nobody actually cares about the number. There's a feeling or an emotion that they're attaching to that number. And if you start to peel back the layers, then you get to the root of what it is that they actually want. Because, you know, I always play the game and I'm like, okay, cool. So if I snap my fingers and you're 10 pounds lighter, but you never get to spend time with your kids, you never get to spend time with your spouse, you have no energy, you're sleeping like shit, and you have some health complications, are you taking it? And they're like, no, of course not. Well, so it's not about the 10 pounds. And it's like, let's actually, what, when you envision that person, what else are you picturing? Because yeah, you might be picturing the body, but just having the body with all of the health complications, or the, you know, let's say it's mental stress or emotional stress. So you're unfulfilled, you're not happy. Just having the body plus all of those other issues, you're not going to take the body. Like, what is it that you're feeling? And really trying to get clear on that. Cause most people, we make decisions based off of emotion. And there's people out there that say, no, I'm really logical. That's fine. We always make decisions on emotion first and then logic second. Or typically what happens is we make a decision based off of emotion and then we try to justify it with logic. That's how the human brain operates. So most of the time, people who say that are chasing a feeling, they're chasing an emotion, there's something that they're attaching to that number that we have to extract. Like, what is it about that person that is so appealing to you? And then you'll start to hear things like confidence and peace of mind and energy. And it's like, okay, well, are all of those things a given or just assumed with this person who's 10 pounds lighter? Is it possible that you could have more energy, more confidence, and more peace of mind and be 3 pounds lighter? Well, like, well, yeah. So why don't we focus on the things that give you more energy, give you more confidence, and give you more peace of mind, and let the number fall where it may? And it is a tough thing because there's a strong association. Like, if I get this, then I'll feel this. And sometimes people have to go to that place to realize that it wasn't what they thought. You know, sometimes I always say, sometimes you have to do the thing to realize it wasn't the thing. So you might go down that path and realize, you know what, this isn't what I thought it was. But going through that exercise is really helpful because it starts to attach more meaning and talking about values and talking about, you know, emotions and what you want to feel, and ultimately painting a clear picture of what that future version of yourself looks like. How do they operate on a day-to-day basis? What's the internal dialogue that they have? What are the emotions that they're feeling, their confidence levels, things like that. Now we can start to paint a more clear picture of the real desire below, you know, beyond just the number.
I love that. And like, how do the clients typically respond to that process? Like, do they not like it at first because they're just so inclined to getting to this number? Like after, you know, you kind of detailed, you know, give them a full detailed description of what your process is like, do they kind of come around to it?
A lot of times they are open to releasing the number. Sometimes it's a little bit harder. Typically, I've found that people who have a stronger association with a number, like thinking back to when they were in college or thinking back when they were younger, and they have all of these like positive associations with it. So they have a tight grip on that number. Like, well, when I was this number at that point, I had more friends and I was happier and whatever. And then it's more talking about like different phases and seasons of life. And without directly saying this to them, humans are really bad at recalling previous emotional states. We tend to overly sensationalize past memories. And we also are really poor at predicting future emotional states. So a lot of times they're imagining this version of their past that wasn't reality. So it's just by asking like certain questions and probing questions that gets them to that their own conclusion. Like, actually, you know what? That wasn't the happiest time of my life. There were some things that I was struggling with. Maybe there was, you know, some, you know, emotional things or mental things or, you know, whatever it may be that weren't great. So maybe I should let go of this number because it's not actually serving me. Let me focus on where I'm at today and becoming the best version of myself moving forward. Some people, they'll give up the number very quickly or just release the need for a specific number. Others, it's a little bit of a longer process, but like anything else, if you keep showing up and you keep doing the work, it's at a certain point, the light bulb goes off and it's just, you know, you kind of rewired your brain to think, you know, think differently.
Yeah. Right. And like, you know, and it turns out the number is not really, it's not even close to the most important factor anyways, like, cause a certain number on the scale can look different for each individual. It's not, you know, a concrete thing. And like, there's so many factors that go into how much you weigh, like, you know, salt, sleep, water retention, all that stuff. So yeah, like the number on the scale, it's not as important as it feels, but we're just so inclined to feel the need to hit a certain number and then we'll be happy. And then we'll, you know, then we'll have this dream life. But like, you know, I know for me, like, you know, a couple of years back when I was doing these extreme diets, I would hit like my leanest I've ever been in my life. And I look back and you're right. Like I kind of over romanticized that period of time where it's like, oh, I kind of missed that look, how I looked, how I felt. But then I remember it's like, well, you know, you kind of, you still weren't satisfied with yourself. You would overanalyze, you would body check all the time. You would miss out on all these memories with food and you wouldn't do all these things because you wanted to keep this body that you had and you want to just, you know, you don't want to go back to the way you looked before. So instead of, you know, feeling present in your current body, you're still not satisfied. You still want to keep going further and further and you're preventing yourself and you're trying to prevent yourself from going back to the way you used to look. So.
Yeah, I had that recently. I looked back at a picture. I did a photo shoot in like, I think it was July of 2019 or 2020. I can't remember the year. And there's this picture of like photo shoot prep day. And I'm just like standing in the kitchen and I have this big smile on my face and I'm absolutely peeled. And I was like, man, I wish I looked like that. And my fiance was like, do you know that was the first smile that you had in like the last 3 weeks when you were going through that? Like you were miserable every day. You smiled for the camera, but I remember how much you hated life at that point in time. And I was like, right. I didn't even think about that. It's like, I saw the physical representation and then I just made up this story that I was happy as can be. The reality was I was miserable for a long period of time. And so, no, I don't want to go back there. And so it's just, you know, sometimes we have to have somebody to pull us out of that, which is another reason why I think having a coach or a support system or a community where you can check yourself, because it's very easy to get lost when you're, you know, inside the frame. It's hard to see the picture when you're inside the frame. So having somebody who's able to give you that 30,000 foot view is really helpful.
Oh, 100%. And this kind of leans into my next question, but for someone who doesn't per se have the resources to have a coach or have the support system around them and they're doing this all on their own, what advice would you have for them if they're starting to get into this fitness journey or this journey with their own body? Like, what are some key tips that you provide for them just based on your past experience? Like, for example, if you were like, if there's ever a period of time, I know I was like, I would be like scared to walk into a gym. Like, what would you say to somebody who is in that current state of mind?
Don't do it on your own. It's one of those things where not everybody is going to have the financial resources to invest in a coach. That's totally fine. I think it is something worth prioritizing, but I also know that there are plenty of resources, communities out there that are totally free. The key is it should be normal to do those things in a certain community where like the standard is just, we do hard things. We move our body. We eat well. We prioritize health. And if you're around like-minded people who are doing that, it will not feel as scary. It'll just feel like, oh, this is what we do. And there's a lot of psychology research to back this up, where if you are, let's say, in a community where all of your neighbors are like not donating, they're not like giving money to charity, then you are less likely to donate and give money to charity. If all of your neighbors are trying to like preserve energy and, you know, they're trying to go green, you're more likely to do the same thing. You will, it's subconscious. We're not thinking about it, but you will start to act in accordance with the people that you're surrounded with. So if you don't have the supportive family environment, if you don't have a supportive partner, if you don't have a coach that you can afford, go seek out communities, whether it's a Facebook community or somewhere locally that you can go to, and just get yourself around like-minded people who are already doing it. You know, I know if you go get, you can get a $10 membership to like a Planet Fitness and schedule a free, you know, session with a trainer, and they'll do like their first session for free and walk you through the gym and make you feel comfortable, show you how to do certain things. You know, seek out people that can help you. And I think that that's, you know, a lot of times people make it harder on themselves by thinking that they're alone. There's always people out there that are on that same mission that are always willing to help and, you know, lend a helping hand in whatever way they can, because they've been there too. We've all been, you know, the first timer. I remember when I first went to the gym and I was trying to get into strength training, and I went to this local gym and I almost turned around and walked out. It was like this tiny little studio, and I peeked in the door and there was these two like really fit people doing like this stretch routine. And I was like, they know what they're doing. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I was like, they're way too fit. I'm like, this, I don't belong here. I almost turned around, and it ended up that that was the gym that I became a personal trainer at, because I just took that first step and I was like, you know, hopefully somebody here will help me. And the head trainer opened the door, was like incredibly welcoming, you know, showed me around, was introducing me to people. And then all of a sudden it just became like, I was just one of them. It was like, this is what we do. We move our bodies. We try to get stronger. We try to prioritize our health. And when you're around that type of environment, it rubs off on you. And, you know, it, that's like the quickest shortcut, is surrounding yourself with people who are on that same mission.
Yeah. And that makes all the difference. Like the people who seem intimidating, they're always the most welcome. They have the utmost respect for someone who's trying to better themselves and get stronger and feel better about themselves, like physically, mentally, like it, like they have the utmost respect for you. And, you know, cause I felt the exact same way. I would walk into a gym and I'd feel so intimidated by the people around me. I wouldn't know what I was doing, and they would, you know, pick up on that and help me out and show me how to do this movement, how to, you know, do this certain weight and how to feel better about it, and, you know, do it the right way. And obviously they're doing it to help you, and they want you to do to improve and, you know, feel better. And it's amazing. I love what you said about, you know, doing it in the community environment, because it makes all the difference. Like I remember, you know, peak quarantine, having to work out by yourself at times. It was terrible. Like the motivation, it certainly was not at the level it was when you're with other people. So it really goes to show like how much having other people around you in your environment makes such like all the difference. So yeah, that's awesome, man. And so you also wrote a book, The Personality Diet. What was that like, having to, you know, transition into to becoming an author?
It was fun. I never thought that I would be at that place where I felt like I had stuff worthy to say and put into a book. I've told this story a lot on my own podcast, but when I was in high school, I had an English teacher that told me I was not a very good writer. And I kind of internalized that and stopped writing, because I was just like, oh, I guess this isn't my thing. And it's really hard to get better at something when you stop doing it. So I spent the better part of, you know, I was a sophomore at the time. So I stopped, I avoided like writing assignments. I tried to, you know, cut corners as much as I could. And then when I went off to college, I didn't take any English classes or writing classes or anything like that. And then I was put in a position when I was working just like a corporate job where I had to write an article, and it was like the first time that I was like actually put on the spot to do this thing that I had avoided for so long. And I actually enjoyed it and I was pretty good at it. And I was like, huh. And it was the first time that I connected the dots that I let this teacher, her voice became my internal voice. And I was like, maybe she doesn't know what she's talking about. Maybe I actually can write. And I started doing it more and more. And then when I started my business, the first thing I started, which was like a kind of just a random decision that I made, but it ended up really helping me grow, was I just decided from day one that I was going to send an email to my list, which in the beginning was incredibly small. Now it's a lot bigger, but I'm going to send an email every single day, Monday through Friday. And I did that I still do it. And it's been almost 5 years now. So I got to a place where I felt pretty confident in that people were liking my writing style and what I had to say and like my philosophy on things. And I always found myself, you know, I started my podcast to explain nuanced things that I felt like our whole industry tries to overgeneralize everything. And I always found myself trying to explain all the little nuances that are involved in this whole thing. And so that was really the thought process behind the book, was let me take all of this nuance and do my best to break it down in a way that's easy to digest and apply. So it's understanding your individual nature, understanding what might work best for you and how to, you know, avoid the comparison trap, or, oh, my neighbor did keto and saw all this progress, so maybe I should do keto. And how do we get out of that mindset and understand, what do our bodies want? Like, what does it work? What does it look like for you as a unique individual? And how do we create a lifestyle that we want to live that keeps us healthy, that helps us reach our goals, that's not just another diet? And that was really the whole thought process behind the book. And it, you know, turned out pretty well.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That really is. How was that whole process, like writing the book? And then once it like was published, was it like just this, like how accomplishing did that feel to like actually complete that task?
It was great, because it was a lot of time, and it was a lot of energy, and it was just like anything else. I just treated it like a habit, where I knew that some days were going to be not the best days and some days were going to be great, and I was just going to show up and do it no matter what. And so I might, you know, some days I would only write like a half a page, and then some days I would knock out like, you know, a full chapter. And I didn't judge. I didn't set like you have to write 10 pages a day. It's just like, you have to write every day. Whatever you write, you write. It doesn't have to be any certain length of time. So the final product I was happy with, but so there was like the accomplishment. And then it was like, in the category that I was in, it was like a new release bestseller for a little bit. And so that was cool to see. But then I kept like, there's this other thing that I wish I add. And like, as I kept learning and more, like learning more and just kind of gaining more experience, finding new ways to communicate information, evolving my own operating system, I kept finding myself like, man, I wish I could go back and rewrite it. So maybe I'll have to have a second book and just kind of update everything and find a different topic to discuss.
Yeah, there you go. Write the sequel, man. Write the sequel. Yeah. All right. So my last question for you, Mike, is if someone were to come up to you and say, out of all the, you know, creators in the fitness industry, out of all the coaches, what makes your content stand out?
I would say probably nothing. I don't think that I'm special. I don't think that I have anything. I don't think that I'm smarter than a lot of the coaches out there or educators out there. I don't think that I'm like, there's nothing about me and the way that I deliver information that's super unique. I think that what connects people to me is that I don't mind getting personal. You'll hear me share my story. I don't mind talking about stuff that some people are afraid to talk about. If I'm struggling, I'm very open about it. If I'm, whatever it may be, if I'm going through setbacks, if I feel like a failure, if I feel imposter syndrome, I'll talk about it. I'll share it. And I also, the one thing that I try to, that I think I do pretty well, is taking concepts that are a bit more nuanced and maybe complex and distill it down into easy to understand, actionable, pieces of information. So, I don't get too in the weeds of being too sciencey. I'm also not too generic. I feel like I have a good balance of, understanding the science, but understanding how to communicate it in a way that's easy to understand and apply. I think I'm a pretty good storyteller, so there's that part of it. But if I had to say, like, you know, I don't think that I'm all that special when it comes to my content. So I always say, like, people who connect and resonate with what I have to say, great, reach out. I'm always happy to help, but there's plenty of amazing coaches and educators out there.
Very humble approach. I like it. I like it. Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming on, man. I will obviously link all of your socials and links in the description, but for those who may not know where to find you, where can people find you?
Yeah. So I appreciate it. The best place to connect with me is typically on Instagram. The handle is @coach_Mike_Milner. And then if you want to hear me ramble about philosophy, psychology, nutrition, mindset, behavior change, training, my podcast is called Mind Over Macros, and that's on any podcast platform.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Please listen to his podcast. Like I said, I listen to it every week. It is so detailed and so in depth and really just a great listen. So definitely check it out. Mike, thank you so much for coming on, man. This was a great talk.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bobby Podcast. If you found this episode relatable, if you resonated with it in any way, if it made you feel less alone, that's truly amazing. That's incredible. Because that's the goal of this podcast. I really want to make and help others feel less alone, whatever they're going through, because this stuff is tough, you know, like ED recovery is tough, and I never want anyone to feel alone in this, because I know there were times I felt alone. So I never want anyone to feel alone. So if you found this episode enjoyable, make sure to subscribe to this podcast. Check out my TikToks. I will leave all those links in the description. I really appreciate you listening. You're all the best. Have a great rest of your day.